Today is April 6, 2016, and this is episode number 354 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I like candy. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com
or
hop over to Twitter. At Context Machine.
Yeah, that's awesome. People have choices. I like when people have choices, especially when they're both good choices.
That's true. One of my choices. Trolley Sour Bright Eggs. I have a sweet tooth. It's true.
I'm not a big candy eater, and I've never even heard of... What would you call them?
Trolley Sour Bright Eggs.
Trolley Sour Bright Eggs.
Yeah, so these are the guys that make the worms, the sour, you know, the sort of like Dayglo worms.
Oh, okay.
And they're semi-sour. These are like large jelly bellies that are misshapen.
So to get these, do you have to ride the train to Hogwarts?
No, usually just a, you know, grocery store. Anyway, they're kind of sour and kind of sweet, but not too much of either. So my old man sweet tooth likes this.
Oh, well, that's great. And
I just thought I'd share. I'm partaking of them because this is, in fact, the second time we've recorded the show today.
It is. And yeah, it is. And by the way, old man sweet tooth, that's my Rolling Stone cover band name.
That's funny.
Yeah, and you know, the fact that we're recording the show a second time, that gives people the opportunity to hear this joke because I didn't make it the first time around.
That's true. Nor was I liking candy. So anyway, something else I have in my hands, and this is also different from the first time we ran the show.
Remember family show, but carry on.
What did I say?
You have something in your hand.
Oh, dude. Oh, man.
What?
You were iron your hand, sir.
Ow. 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 No, I meant like a prickly pear.
Uh-huh. Moonshot by John Scully. It's his new book.
Oh, nice.
It was delivered while we were recording the first time around. And before we started again, I went and got it. Lest someone thieve it. He said on the back here, I wrote Moonshot because I believe this is the best time ever to build a transformational business. And Mr. Scully apparently has some advice. In my book, I try to provide entrepreneurs and business executives with insights and tools they can use to build successful businesses.
All right. So that sounds like it could be a useful book for some people.
Well, hopefully it'll be useful in my interview. I'm going to interview him next Monday, and hopefully I have the time to. It's not a thick book. Hopefully I can get it finished.
That's awesome. Assuming that because you're a nice guy, you'll bring him a Coke.
That is a joke that I got the very first time. Time. Oh, what did they say in Fight Club?
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
No,
that's Doctor Who.
Best lines of the movie. And goes, flashback humor. He's got the gun in the. Anyway, you need to watch the movie.
I do. It's on my to do list.
I watched it. It was on IFC. Like, I think I was watching it the last time we talked about it, and it was on again. It's just such a great movie, man.
I will watch it. Yeah.
So anyway, I wanted to share something.
Oh, do tell.
I got a full request on my novel today. Not today, actually, on Monday.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's the first full request I've gotten from an agent. I just started querying in February. I've got 9 queries out, and I got 1 rejection so far, 1 full request, and 7 outstanding queries. That's an outstanding beginning.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and sent it off. Spent a few hours arguing with Word about formatting.
Oh, yeah, I've been there. I've done that. When you're writing a book, and you have to deal with the formatting in Word. Word actually made me seriously start thinking that maybe reincarnation is a thing. And that Word is one of those karmic tools that was developed to punish us for wrongs we did in past lives. Which means I must have been a very, very bad person.
Well, both of us. So we both worked on nonfiction books. And to be honest, formatting a manuscript for a nonfiction book is a lot harder than it is for a fiction book, because you got a lot of call outs and insertions that you have to make, and and most publishers have some kind of format that they want used on that stuff, and it truly is a pain in the butt. But I had my own, you know. It's like I'm 60% fluent in Word, which is just enough to get me into a lot of serious trouble.
I'd say it is.
I got that wrong. I'm 60% fluent in Scrivener.
Okay.
Scrivener, and then 30% fluent in Word, and you combine the two, and it's like I'm just a disaster waiting to happen. Speaking of which, by the way, we have a deal on Scrivener this week. Did you see that?
I did see that, but oh no, wait. Brian, are you serious? We have a deal on Scrivener? Tell me about that.
We do. It's Scrivener 2. It's 50% off. I think it's $22.50.
Wow.
I love it when Stack Commerce puts together a deal on Scrivener for us. They always go really quickly. I love Scrivener. I love Scrivener. Unfortunately, in the publishing industry, like you can write your book all you want in Scrivener, but at some point you're going to end up moving that particular manuscript over to Word, where it will live the end of its life, or live till the end of its life.
Right, and it will be a slow, grueling, painful end of its life.
Right, and I've started that process, you know, until I actually get picked up by an agent. The point is, we have a deal in Scrivener too. It's a great piece of software. If you write and you're serious about writing, be it short stories, screenplays, any kind of long format stuff, especially material where you've got to organize a lot of stuff, Scrivener is the bee's knees, and I love it. And
I have to quibble with you.
Yeah.
You said the point is we have this great deal on Scrivener, which is really nice. The point really is that there is an agent out there that is intrigued enough by your book to see that there's some potential there and requested the whole thing.
Yeah, technically intrigued by the query.
Mm-hmm.
And the first five pages. This particular agent wanted the first five pages along with the query. So reading that made her want to request a full, and I'm super excited about that. And
I'm looking forward to when your book gets published.
I'm terrified, by the way.
Well, sure. I mean, this is totally new territory for you. It's really exciting. And I'm excited for the day when your book is published and is on a shelf in bookstores, so I can go into different bookstores and take selfies with your book and post them online. Seriously.
First of all, you're the best. You have been so incredibly supportive of me trying to write this book, and you've read so many versions of the book as I was trying to learn how to write fiction. You know, I've been writing nonfiction in the journalistic world and working on For Dummies books for almost two decades, but fiction is a different beast, and you have been such a trooper to be there for me. But here is here's the funny thing. If she offered me, if I got signed by an agent tomorrow, and the agent sold the book to a publisher the next day, neither of which is going to happen, by the way,
I don't know. Check your email.
No. Even if I get offered representation, it would take a couple of weeks while I let other. Anyway, it literally cannot happen tomorrow. But even if I got signed tomorrow and the book was sold to a publisher the next day, it'd be, you know, somewhere between a year and 2 years before you saw it on the shelves.
I'm patient.
So the publishing industry is an interesting one.
Yeah, it is. I'm always amazed that books get from concept to finished product and on shelves, not because I think publishers are incompetent, but because I know what the process is, and the fact that all these pieces can come together time and again to make a book happen. It's just amazing.
Yeah, so many people. so many people involved, so many processes, so many layers of edits to go through, and you know, covers to argue about, and it's a fascinating process, and yeah, it's just a fascinating process. Here, let me lay some more flashback humor
on you. Okay.
Yeah, I have no idea. I had a joke.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine.
That's probably. Oh, I know. All right. Hey, Jeff, let me light some more flashback humor on you.
Oh, okay.
What's the show about?
I'm really not sure.
Bags. The show is about bags.
Oh, right. Right. I'd forgotten that's our underlying theme every episode.
Right, bags. In particular, we had a little bit of news from Apple. 9to5 Mac broke it. They're moving to paper bags, which, you know, really shouldn't be that big a deal.
So, like, in the retail stores?
In the retail stores. You know, they've been using those. Well, I genuinely feel that they're iconic, the plastic bags that Apple's been using.
Sure. You don't want to throw one away because they're so awesome.
Yeah, they're, you know, they're that beautiful sort of off-white. They've got a nice dark gray Apple logo, or is it black?
It's gray.
Yeah.
And the drawstrings, same color gray.
Made out of a nice, like, I think it's a braided cloth.
Yeah, whatever it is. It's some sort of braided cord cloth thing. And there's the nice metal grommets where the holes are, where the drawstring cords go into the bag. And I've never had one of those bags wear out, and I actually keep using them.
Sure. Yeah. And they've, you know, I mean, lots of people, I mean, I have heard people talk about Apple's bags, and Apple made the decision to move to a paper bag because, A, it can be made out of recycled material, and B, it can then be recycled once it's no longer being used.
Sure, and, which makes sense.
And plastic bags can last, I believe, you know, centuries, if not millennia. Maybe tens of millennia. I don't even know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at least with Apple's bags, they are functional even after you leave the store. And I see people using them just as, like, little utility bags all the time.
Sure. Yeah, I've done the same thing. So... But what's really interesting to me about this is because it's just so easy to see Tim Cook, like, my list included Tim Cook, Johnny Ive, Phil Schiller, Angela Arendt, and Lisa Jackson, some of Apple's top executives,
mm-hmm.
making a decision on what kind of new bag they're going to use. And that this decision, I mean, like, you know, in most companies, This would be a bean counter decision. This would be an accountant deciding that, you know, look, we can save 0.62 cents per transaction,
mm-hmm.
by switching to this particular bag or that particular bag or whatever.
And then, right? They just do it.
Yeah. And then they do it. And, you know, and it's, you know, the aesthetics aren't considered. The design isn't really considered. Even, I mean, someone's working on the design, but it's not. That's not the basis of the decision.
Right.
And
yeah, the design is a side effect of the bag they chose.
Right. Right. And then in often case, it'll even be like, this is the bag we chose, now, you know, put our logo on it or so, whatever. I mean, just, you know, most companies don't care about these things, and they're making their decisions based, and don't get me wrong, some companies are absolutely making a customer experience choice for their bags. This would be especially true for high-end retailers.
Sure, and I think Apple has been doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have no doubt that Steve Jobs approved the original bag design. No doubt.
Right, and I think part of that bag design... Well, every part of the bag design is very intentional, but I think part of the intent was to make the drawstrings long enough so you can sling the bag over your shoulder and carry it over one shoulder or over both shoulders and wear it like a backpack.
Yeah, I had specifically noticed that too. It's a very functional design, and I see that Nightshade.
Yeah. Well, she felt bad that she didn't get to participate in the first show.
Fair enough. I also feel bad for her. So the other thing is that when Apple tells me, let me quote here. If this is a 9to5 Mac broke the message that was given to retail employees. Quote, "We are committed to leaving the world better than we found it, one bag at a time. So on April 15th, we'll switch to paper shopping bags made from 80% recycled materials. These bags come in medium and large. When customers are buying a product, ask if they need a bag. They may decide they don't, and you'll encourage them to be even more environmentally friendly. If you still have plastic bags in stock, use them before you switch," blah, blah, blah. So when Apple says something like that, I believe it.
I believe it too. But I have to point out something that I didn't notice until just now. Mm-hmm. The bags are will be available in medium and large. So they have two sizes.
Yeah, that's true.
There is no medium if there's two sizes. There's large and true. Small.
Yeah. Yeah. I did time at Domino's in another life, right?
Yes. Yes, that's true.
And it always drove me nuts that we, at that time, we did a medium and a large. We did a 12-inch and a 16-inch pizza. And it always, it would just drive me, it's, you know.
Yeah, you did a large and a small pizza is what you did.
Oh, wait, what am I doing? No, I'm actually lying to you. We did a small and a large, but our small was the same size as the competition's medium.
Oh, okay.
That would... Yeah, anyway, ignore that. Let's just take that out.
Sure.
No one needs to hear that.
And it's gone. I'm yeah.
Excellent. Thank you. So Apple is there could be some sort of bag standard they're comparing that to.
Yep, maybe.
So anyway, Apple says this stuff, and like I said, it's interesting because I actually believe that it was made for environmental reasons. I like the fact that Apple thinks big, right? You know, we had the news last week that Apple has 100% of its energy needs met in the U.S. by, was it renewable or green energy?
It's a combination.
And 93% of its global energy is being met in that same way, which is astounding.
Yes.
It is astounding, but those are big picture. Those are big picture things. Not that they don't require a minute focus at times. That's big picture stuff. But you know, Apple is even thinking about its environmental footprint when it comes to things like the bags used in its retail store, and you know, that's the kind of attention to detail that is part of why we like Apple.
It is, and I like that they're doing. Something that the Apple Store I've already seen doing here in Boulder, the 29th Street Mall store, where they're going to ask if you need a bag as opposed to simply bagging whatever it is you bought.
Right. And there's also that keyword there, need versus want.
Yes.
When you're asking someone if they need a bag, my guess is that we as consumers are much more likely to actually think about it in those terms. Do you need a bag? No. Do you want a bag? Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big psychological thing right there.
I would assume so. Have you played a psychologist on stage?
Yes, I actually have.
Did you? Seriously?
Yeah. I've also played a medical doctor on stage.
Well, that one we knew. I didn't realize you're also qualified to speak on mental health issues. That's fantastic. Good for us.
Yeah. I've got us covered. You would be amazed at some of the areas of expertise that I have simply because of a script that I memorized.
Excellent. So anyway, that's bags. It's bags. It's interesting to me. I don't know. Dear listeners, do you find this interesting? I truly find this interesting. And I'm curious if anyone else cares too.
You know, what I find interesting is that Apple pays so much attention to design of everything related to their business and by extension in their retail business. And so the notion that they are changing the bags that they will use is something that we are interested in and something that their competitors will probably be watching too?
Well, maybe. I mean, I could see Microsoft doing a knee-jerk. Of course, Microsoft may already be using paperbacks. And let's be clear, Apple is not the first company to switch to paperbacks.
True.
Or use paperbacks. You know, I mean, in a lot of areas, it's plastic bags have actually been, the cheap plastic bags have been
banned.
Banned, yeah.
Here in Boulder, so the other side of the studio for you, plastic bags, there's a 10 cent per bag charge, and that's a city thing.
So on the Bay Area side of the studio, this has largely been dealt with on a county by county basis, with a few municipalities doing their own thing too. It's paper, the plastic bags are banned, and if you want a paper bag, you have to pay 10 cents for it.
So, you know, and actually, now that I think about it, I misspoke. It's any bag, 10 cents per bag. And some stores don't even carry plastic. Some do, like the big grocery stores, like King Supers, Kroger, and Safeway. They have plastic bags, but a lot of stores don't.
Fair enough. And Apple, you know, all right. So anyway, bags. Let us know if you're interested. I'm curious. Curious if anyone cares about this. Anyone else thinks this is interesting?
I'm curious how much people would pay for a bag.
Speaking of paying for bags, mm-hmm. Did you watch the Taylor Swift versus the treadmill video?
Yes. I love that video. I absolutely love it. It's the one that's an ad for Apple Music.
Yeah, it's interesting too. You won't find this on Apple's YouTube channel. You'll find it on the Beats One YouTube channel, singular. YouTube's.
Yeah, because they only have
like
the one.
I sound like I'm a politician that's 70 years old.
And this is Apple's dump truck of music. No, they use YouTube's.
Yeah, anyway, so it's a commercial that Taylor Swift did for Apple Music. The tagline is so good it's distracting. Or distractingly good. That's how Apple put it. But it's very funny. She's doing a workout and she's on her treadmill and something goes wrong.
Yes, it does. And so much so that I actually gasped at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. Because you're just not expecting it.
Oh, no, not at all. But there it is.
It's funny. Did you read Mashable's take?
I did. And I'm trying to figure out, what do they have against Apple or Taylor Swift?
Yeah. What do you have that in front of you?
No, I closed it because I was so disappointed with her take. I didn't want to have a window open anymore.
They're just like, you know, she's basically, you know, LOL, Taylor Swift still trying to prove to us that she's just like us, and she's not because, you know, she's rich or something. And it seemed like harsh and just petty and mean-spirited.
It really did feel that way.
I mean, it's I thought it was a Q commercial. It was funny. I really want to know if she did her own stunt.
I would like to know too. Someone's going to ask her at some point.
Yeah, at some point it's going to come out whether or not she did her own stunt there. If that was a stunt double taking the fall, it was a spoiler alert.
Oh, Brian, you did spoiler alert wrong.
I did, didn't I? Oops. If that was editing and a double, then it was, you know, like someone should be getting an Emmy for the commercial for the editing.
Yeah,
because it looks like Taylor Swift did her own stunt. I have no idea. Doesn't seem likely because, you know, multiple takes. I mean, how many times do we want you know, if you're Taylor Swift's management or Taylor Swift herself or even Apple, how many?
Well, that depends. I mean, is she like just everyone else? Well, if that's the case,
everyone else doesn't want to take multiple falls.
Right. But I think for the money involved, everyone else would take four falls and then start complaining on the fifth.
It's pretty brutal. Of course, you know, sound effects make it.
Oh, man, the sound effects are perfect.
Can enhance the feeling of.
Yeah.
So anyway, cute video. I like it. I think it's delightful.
I liked it too. And it's funny. As long as we're going down this path, I have to tell you my current favorite Apple commercial.
Okay.
iPhone 6S Cookie Monster.
Now, have you seen the long? I've seen a longer version since the first one. Either that or I paid attention more.
I don't know if I've seen a longer version or not.
Have you seen the one where he goes outside?
Yes.
He's looking in through the window?
Yes.
Was that in the one that I originally wrote up?
I don't remember. I don't remember. But it's wonderful.
It's very funny.
I love that he's using the oven mitts as puppets. And he's doing a little puppet show with them.
I love when he shoves the wooden spoon down his mouth because he doesn't want to wait for cookies.
He doesn't want to wait for cookies.
And it's hard to blame him.
I know. And he's Cookie Monster. So I'm assuming that if anyone knows how to make good cookies, it's him.
Okay, moving along.
Wait, I just have to point out one more thing. Uh-huh. Did you catch at the very end of the commercial, the small type?
No, what is it?
This commercial is brought to you by the number 6 and the letter S.
I totally missed that. I can't believe I missed that.
It's that's just the icing on the cake for that ad. Okay, now we can move on.
Icing on the cookie. Now I was trying to move on from you calling him Cookie Monster.
That was
my original.
And I'm sure, yeah. But
okay, you're so nice to me about my book. And then I harsh on you for saying things like Warshin Monster.
I know. What is your problem?
What is my problem? Why am I such a jerk?
I think you're just frustrated with the whole process and timeline for getting a book published, and you're deflecting that frustration at me. And because I can justify your actions, I'm actually enabling you, and I'm going to make the problem worse. So what I should be saying is, knock that off, man.
It's all right.
What's your problem, man?
Yeah, I'll work on that Cookie Monster.
Sorry about your tires.
Speaking of Cookie Monster.
Yeah.
How about that Bernie Sanders fellow?
Yeah, how about him? And how about his take on Apple?
Well, so he was he did recently talk about Apple, but because he was asked point blank by the New York Daily News, who mm-hmm. was probably trying to bait him.
Sure.
He's like, for example, in corporate America. He said, you said that the greed of Wall Street and corporate America is destroying the fabric of our nation. This is a question that was asked of Bernie Sanders. So if we can get particular, for example, in corporate America, Apple happens to be celebrating today its 40th birthday. So this was, what was that, on Friday?
Yeah, a couple of days ago. Yeah.
It's a company that grew from nothing to 115,000 permanent employees. And I'm wondering, is Apple destroying the fabric of America? That's what they asked Bernie. And Bernie Sanders replied, no, Apple is not destroying the fabric of America, but I do wish they'd be manufacturing some of their devices here in the United States rather than China. And I do wish that they would not be trying to avoid paying their fair share of taxes.
Okay, well, that's kind of interesting because they do manufacture in the United States.
Some.
And Apple has gone out of its way to make sure that people know that they pay their fair share of taxes based on the letter of the law.
Well, and to be fair to Apple, Apple does pay taxes.
Yes, they do.
Apple is the biggest taxpayer in America.
Which, I mean, that's something right there. That's a crazy amount of money.
Yeah, and that's essentially only the profits that Apple is making in the United States. because the profits that it makes overseas stay overseas, and Apple does not owe income tax on that money while it stays overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't owe income tax in the United States, that is.
Right, right. And I'm sure that that many politicians, well, a lot of people, would like to see Apple bring that money into the United States. But there's no incentive for them to do that. As a matter of fact, there are laws in place that would make it foolish for Apple to bring that money into the United States.
Yeah, namely the tax rate itself. And what Apple is not doing is using offshore companies to divert or hide profits that it makes in the U.S. Now, it doesn't necessarily do that outside the U.S. It uses a very complex string of subsidiaries outside the U.S. to divert as many profits as possible through countries where taxation, corporate taxation is low, to wit, Ireland. Ireland's the most famous at this point.
Mm-hmm. And that's not against the law. It may be distasteful to some, but it's not against the law.
Yeah. It's interesting. So, you know, Apple was hauled in front of a Senate committee where they tried to bang on the company, mm-hmm. Saying they're doing tax avoidance. And the reality is that when it comes to the U.S., Apple really isn't doing tax avoidance because it just doesn't owe this money yet. You know, profits that it makes overseas are not taxed until they're brought into the United States. Apple's not avoiding anything. It's just prolonging the day when it has to pay. And they're prolonging it, hopefully, from their vantage point, to a day when there's either a tax holiday, a temporary tax holiday, mm-hmm. where taxes are temporarily lowered, or they're prolonging that day until corporate taxes in the states are actually just lowered.
Which makes sense. It would be fiscally responsible for Apple to bring that money into the United States.
And that is not tax avoidance, let alone tax evasion. That is just plain the law. And mm-hmm. Almost all of the major companies, if not all the major companies, I haven't seen any statistics on this, but major multinational companies that are based in the U.S. routinely do this. And it's because the tax rate on those profits made overseas is something along the lines of 35%. That's for Apple, that would be a huge, you know, be tens and tens of billions of dollars, scores of billions of dollars.
Yet shareholders would not be pleased to see Apple bring that money in and immediately lose 35% of it.
Right. They would not. So, you know, and Apple has said to the U.S. Senate, if you don't let, you know, we follow the law. If you don't like what we're doing, change the law. And I think that there's a lot of merit to that notion. Now, this is certainly not a black and white issue, and it's certainly not an easy issue. You know, you've got things like Apple and every other large company pitting one municipality or one county or one state against another to get tax breaks to build any kind of expansion in a given area.
Now, while the practice may be distasteful, it's not against the law.
It is not against the law, and this is actually one area where I think that Apple should really think differently. I think that all companies, companies should stop asking for tax breaks to build, you know, to start some new venture in a particular town, county, or state. They should stop asking mm-hmm. for those tax breaks. And the reason why they should stop asking for those tax breaks is, first of all, you and I can't do that. You know,
no, we can't.
I can't. Let's pretend that I was rich, and I am so far from rich, it's not even funny. But let's pretend that I was rich. Let's pretend that I'm Warren Buffett. Actually, let's just say Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett can't go to New York State or New York City and say, I'll move here if you'll waive my local taxes.
Well, he could try, just like I could try.
He could do it. I've never heard of that sort of thing happening.
Yeah, it's not going to fly.
No, it's not going to fly. But companies are able to do this all the time. And the reason why I think that they should not do it is because I believe they need to pull their local weight, especially when they're using local services. The example that we talked about in version 1.0 of the show, mm-hmm. of this episode, was Samsung. And I'm not singling out Samsung because I have a beef with the company. Samsung makes processors for Apple. Fabricates right. processors for Apple in a facility that it built in Manor, Texas, which is right outside Austin. So, like, usually when we talk about Apple, when we talk about Samsung doing that stuff in Austin, we actually mean Manor, for whatever that's worth. And they got significant tax breaks from the city of Manor or the county, I forget which, maybe both, to build the fab there. And, you know, who doesn't want a large fabrication facility coming that's going to employ hundreds of people, if not thousands of people? I don't know how many people work there.
Sure. And especially in an area where people have been looking for jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, especially in which is going to be any area. I mean, people want companies. Anyway, the point is that what Manor found is that it didn't have enough money from its regular taxing practices to handle the new students in their school system that came as a result of this factory being opened.
Oh, interesting. So they got a big company in, but then weren't getting the revenue they needed to build up their infrastructure to support all these new people.
Right.
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah. Well, and that's not just a problem for Manor and the people that live there. That is also a problem for Samsung in this case. You know, and Apple has a lot of stuff going on in Austin too. They've mm-hmm. also Apple has gotten tax breaks from Travis County and Austin, the city of Austin.
Right. That's for the big administrative facility they've built.
Yeah, Apple does a lot of AppleCare stuff out of Austin. Apple has a pretty significant presence in Austin. And this isn't just a problem for the people that live there or the school board or the city government. This is really, in my opinion, this is a problem for the companies themselves, because if the local schools don't have enough money as a direct result of your actions, well, that means that your employees, let's not even look at the benefit to society of future generations getting a proper education. Let's not even look at that. Let's look at the stress and strain on your employees who have children in those school systems, right? Mm-hmm. Their productivity and mental health will be lower for you than they would be without those particular problems existing.
That's right? A good point. Yeah.
So, in my opinion, it is in a company's best interests to pay its fair share of local taxes. And that includes mm-hmm. Apple. This is something I think that Apple needs to think differently about. Apple has enormous power to extract significant concessions from local and state governments throughout the U.S., as well as in districts and areas and countries and cities, wherever, outside the U.S. And I think that Apple should actually be a better citizen and not try to get those concessions.
Now, how do you think shareholders would respond if they knew that Apple was in a position where they could lower their tax liability legally in a jurisdiction by swinging deals like this to move in, but chose not to?
Well, it depends on the case that was made. it depends on the case that was made by Apple to those shareholders. If the case is made by Apple to those shareholders that we believe that that the health and well-being and financial security of these areas where we're doing business affects our business in such a way that it is that we believe it's important to go ahead and pay this, you know, the same kinds of taxes that anyone else in that area would pay. Apple could make that case. That case is not a hard case to make, in my opinion.
Sure. I'm just wondering if it would be an easy pill for shareholders to swallow.
Well, for a company like Apple, it would definitely be an easy pill. Most shareholders are going to back what Apple's doing until the day comes when Apple's finances collapse, at which point people will be screaming and hollering for a variety of reasons.
Sure.
I mean, Apple, generally speaking, Apple's management gets a free pass from its shareholders to do whatever it is that it wants to do.
Sure. And now, okay, let's say Apple is looking to build a new data center. And so they're shopping around to different cities to see if the infrastructure they need and other services they need will be available. And it's down to two cities. And one of them says, hey, Apple, we will give you these tax cuts, these tax breaks to build your facility here. Do you think Apple should say, no, we'll build in your city, but no, we're not going to take the tax breaks?
No, that's a super tough question. And, you know, I'm glad I'm not the person necessarily making, not necessarily, let me rephrase that. I'm glad I'm not the person that has to make that decision. What I really want to see is I want to see cities stop competing against each other in this way. They're cutting off their nose to spite their face. And I want to see companies stop asking for it. They can do this. Cities can do this. County governments can do this. They should all stop. Because taxes pay for essential services. And you need those essential services. Your company needs those essential services. Your employees need those essential services. And the community needs those essential services. And, you know, having a company get along, have a company being able to get a free ride on the backs of everybody else is not right, especially when that company is a company like Apple, where it makes so much money. And so to a large extent, I think that applies to the way Apple does everything outside the U.S. too. I mean, Apple follows the letter of the law with its, you know, double Dutch, double Irish with a double Dutch, no, Irish sandwich with a double Dutch twist, I think is what it's called. And Apple was a pioneer in structuring things in the way they are. And really, national governments need to get their act together too. But, you know, but then again, you've got the problem of everybody wants a company like Apple.
Sure. And you can't have one jurisdiction, whether that's a city, county, state, or country, that says we are done offering these deals, because everyone needs to say we're done offering the deals or it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the reality, is that there's always going to be someone who'll do it. Always going to be some country that'll do it. There's always going to be some, you know, you've been following this Panama paper business,
yes,
right? Panama Papers.
Panama Papers. Yeah, there's definitely more than one in this case.
Yeah, and this has been news in the last, I don't know, week, 10 days, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's exposing some of the offshore shenanigans of the ultra-rich and ultra-rich companies, too, that routinely use places like Panama, Cayman Islands, Virgin Islands, the British Virgin Islands in particular, mm-hmm. To hide money, to shelter it.
Right.
See? Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, see, Nightshade's really upset about the whole tax money hiding thing.
Well, she should be. This affects her kibble.
It totally does. And see, we said it again, and then she just cried. Sorry, Nightshade. Brain didn't mean it.
And I don't know. There's always going to be a country that is willing to do this stuff. And it was interesting. I was listening to the BBC yesterday, where they were talking about, and I can't remember if this was just the anchors that were discussing this. This is BBC Radio, BBC World News, actually, is what it's technically called. And, or if they were actually asking, they were asking some, you know, guest that was being interviewed about this, but they were, the subject was, should Britain start directly ruling, i.e. controlling its overseas territories, including the UK, British Islands, the British Virgin Islands, and the Cayman Islands, because right now they're British territories, but they're allowed to do what they want, and it's giving Britain a black eye. That was the theory that passed around.
Interesting.
And, yeah, there's some merit to that, to say the least.
Yeah. So back to Bernie Sanders' statement. Apple is paying their fair share.
Well, Apple is paying its fair share by definition. They're paying every cent it's owed. And my argument is that countries or governments that want Apple to behave differently need only change the law. And I don't say that flippantly. I don't, I'm not just saying, well, you know, it's your fault. Change the law. I don't mean it that way. I mean, any governmental entity that is serious about change here needs to change their laws. The EU needs to get a grasp of what Ireland has its local laws set up to do.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to change this. And in the case, so one of the things that Apple does is, Apple sells stuff to its Irish subsidiary. And then the Irish subsidiary licenses those same stuffs to, say, their German subsidiary. And they license them at a price that results in very little in Apple generating very little profit in Germany, whereas Ireland generates all the profit that would, you know, otherwise normally have been generated from selling those goods in Germany. Right.
And Apple's tax rates in Ireland are much lower than they are in Germany.
Right. So Apple ends up paying very little tax in Germany, very little tax in Czechoslovakia, very little tax in you know, every country, and then very little tax in Ireland, because the tax rate that they get in Ireland is very low. It's all legal, according to Apple. And so far, there's
according to Ireland.
According to Ireland, and really, quite frankly, according to third-party people that have been, you know, looking at this and screaming about it for a long time. No one's actually ever accused Apple of doing anything wrong. No one's held up any evidence saying that Apple's breaking the law, because Apple probably is not breaking the law.
Right.
But Germany could pass protectionist laws to keep that from happening.
Right.
Or the EU could pass or enact protectionist regulations that prevent that sort of thing from happening, that make it difficult for Apple to do what it does, to make it difficult. And by the way, a bunch of other companies follow Apple's lead on this. Apple is a pioneer in this area, but Apple is by far... it is far from alone in doing this sort of thing. I mean, this stuff is tackleable through regulatory. Tackleable. Yeah, that's a word.
Wow. Just okay.
This week, the U.S. scuttled a tax evasion. That's another thing that's been in the news. It's tax evasion. That's where a big company in the U.S. buys some, you know, pointless and tiny company outside the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And then says, oh, by the way, we're now a corporation that's based where over here, where this tiny company was. And overnight, they're essentially subject to the tax laws of that tiny company, as opposed to the tax laws of the U.S. That's what Avon did. Avon moved to the U.K.
Mm-hmm.
Pfizer was going to move, I think, to Ireland. I can't remember if it was Ireland. Pfizer was in the midst of a tax inversion deal, and the Treasury Department, which is an arm of the executive branch, i.e. the White House, i.e. President Obama, put in place rules that made it very difficult, changed the rules so that it became significantly less profitable, perhaps even unprofitable, for Pfizer to do this. And it wasn't just aimed at Pfizer. It was aimed at all tax evasions. Mm-hmm. And boom, Pfizer deal scuttled.
And I'm sure the Pfizer executive team was like, but man, we would have had the best snake extermination company in all of Ireland.
Right.
Anyhow, actually, Scotland. Or is it Ireland?
Ireland was the snakes.
That's right.
St. Patrick. St. Patrick, right. We killed all the snakes.
Yeah.
Killed all the snakes in Ireland. So anyway, so I should mention, I got a rather angry letter from a gentleman named Mark Dye. He said, I'm quoting, "Your defense of Apple's tax policy is as weak and morally damaged as the governors of Mississippi and North Carolina defending their new, quote unquote, religious freedom laws. Technically legal, but to say that assembling the aged and updated, unupdated Mac Pro counts as manufacturing in the U.S. is just tokenism. What fraction of less than 1% does that make in Apple's revenue? In the end, can't, don't, and won't are all the same." And I understand Mark's frustration with me. However, I will say that comparing a corporation following the law to bigots making a law, that's an apples and oranges comparison to make the understatement of the week.
And Apple does make more than the Mac Pro in the United States.
Apple makes the Mac Pro. It's not just assembling the Mac Pro. Apple makes the Mac Pro in the United States. He's right that it's a tiny percentage of Apple's income. I don't really think that's the point. But Apple also assembles, I believe it's Mac Minis or iMacs or both.
It's iMacs for sure. It's not all iMacs, but there are quite a few iMacs manufactured in the United States.
Right. And then Apple also produces components or buys components and other supplies from companies operating in 33 states in the United States.
Okay, that's kind of significant.
That is the farthest thing from tokenism that I can imagine. But you know, you one can think differently. One can think that Apple should bring, you know, iPhone production to the U.S. It's not going to happen, and if it does happen, it'll be because Apple's figured out how to have everything done with robots.
Sure. And, you know, I like the idea of Apple moving more of its actual production into the United States.
Sure, of course.
But the problem is there is no infrastructure in place for Apple to be able to do that.
Well, our forefathers, and we've mentioned this before in the show, our forefathers fought and died, in both cases literally, to protect us from having the same kind of, you know, work towns and work camps. Not work camps, that's so not the right word.
Yeah, that's so not the
company,
right word.
Company towns that are how Apple makes iPhones today. And one can be angry that Apple would do so, and that's fine. I have a lot of empathy for any kind of frustration along those lines. I happen to appreciate a 40-hour work week. I happen to appreciate overtime pay.
I also appreciate getting paid in the national currency as opposed to the company currency.
With the company store.
Right.
And, you know, all the other benefits that that largely unions have fought and gained, things that we take for granted on a daily basis here in the United States today. But one can be angry that Apple would choose to make its products in a country where those protections don't exist. And like I said, I have a lot of empathy for that. But at the same time, Apple has done more than any other company that I've been able to find to improve working conditions in those countries, to pay more than the law requires in those other countries, to have education and training that exceeds local requirements, to improve the safety beyond local requirements, to improve the environmental footprint beyond any kind of local requirement. Apple has led the charge in making these things better in these other countries. And to a large extent, I think that rather than lamenting what Apple hasn't done, I think that Apple should largely be applauded for what it's done and encouraged to do more.
I like that. Yeah. And I like knowing that Apple has made an effort to bring some production into the United States and has said they would like to be able to bring more in.
Right.
They just can't right now.
I suspect that Apple will do so where it makes sense, to be honest, and for a very good reason.
Mm-hmm.
That very good. I was eating some sour bright eggs. So sorry about that.
That you got on the bus that you rode to Hogwarts, because why didn't you get on the train?
That's a good question. Let me know, since you're the one constructing that story.
Cheaper candy eggs.
What's the point here? What are we talking about?
The point is Apple has said they would like to bring more production into the United States.
Yeah. I think that Apple will, where it makes sense. And I think the reason why Apple would like to do that is because when Apple is employing those employees, it has more control over the process and over secrecy.
Totally makes sense.
But at the same time, that's why Apple has done it for relatively small batches of things like the Mac Pro, small batches of iMacs and Mac Minis.
Mm-hmm.
Making iPhones in quantity is a difficult thing to do.
Yes. Well, making anything Apple produces in quantity is difficult.
Right. But at the same time, I don't think that making I think it was Recode that said that Apple spent $100 million building the Mac Pro plant. Now, our listeners have heard me rant and just go, you know, bananas about the fact that, you know, we're coming up on 3 freaking years and Apple hasn't updated the Mac Pro.
Mm-hmm.
But that also doesn't really have anything to do with anything. So I don't know. I don't think it's tokenism. And I don't think there's any comparison whatsoever between, like I said, a company following the law and bigots making law. So there's, I mean, it's just, that's an absurd comparison. I reject it out of hand and utterly.
But thanks for the letter.
Oh yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Anyone disagrees with them. I don't care whether anytime I can be challenged to think is a gift. And I don't, that sounds kind of hokey, but I mean it. I mean, you know, if I could be challenged to think, if my opinions are challenged, it gives me an opportunity to learn something. So, absolutely. Thank you for the note.
Oh yeah. I love it that people write in and share their opinions, even when they may be different from our own. I think it's awesome.
Whether or not they agree with us, love us or hate us, we want to hear from you. Now, that said, we did get that. Did you read that letter from Bruce Lynn?
Yes, I did. And it was awesome.
I got a quote from him, too.
Okay.
Brian and Jeff, if I had the opportunity to spend 1 week with the president or 1 day with the two of you, I would choose spending a day with the two of you.
That's the nicest thing I've heard all week. That's awesome.
That is like one of the nicest things that anyone has ever said about, at the very least, me.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thank you.
He said, preferably in Colorado or Austin, Texas, where I live from 78 till 92. I really appreciate you guys. Thank you for the Daily Observations podcast and Apple Context Machine, both of which I have listened to since about their respective first episodes.
That's awesome.
What did I say the first time we recorded the show?
I don't remember, but what I said is, Bruce, if you do make it to Colorado, let me know and we will hang out.
Right. Yeah. And then I said something like, if you do make Colorado, let Jeff know and tell me how it goes. Nah, I'm kidding. I think both of us would be happy to have coffee with all of our probably not all at one time.
I don't know. That could be really awesome.
Yeah. But if you're going to be in our respective areas, give us a ring. We'll definitely meet you for coffee.
Absolutely. I would love it.
But doing a show like this is the definition of nothing without our listeners.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just Jeff and I yakking to ourselves if we don't have listeners. So
just killing hearing, time.
Hearing from you, like it's, I love the fact that today I got two great examples here. We have someone who appreciates and loves what we do, which is amazing. So we had someone who so violently disagreed with us that he wrote a very, very sharply worded letter.
Now, we need to be fair, Brian. He may enjoy and appreciate what we do. He just disagrees with us or you in sure. this instance.
That's entirely possible. Either way, he took the time to write.
And that's awesome.
Yeah. If you don't have the time to write, take the time to send us a tweet at Context Machine.
Yeah, we actually check it.
We want to hear from you. And thanks to everybody, and thanks to you, Jeff, for doing the show again with us.
And Brian, thanks for doing the show again with me.
Yeah, well, it wasn't my fault. It was actually Jeff's fault.
It wasn't my fault.
What? You're so nice to me. You're so supportive. You're so supportive, and I'm so mean.
Yeah, but little things happen, like I'm sorry about your tires.
I can only say fair enough.
And wouldn't it be a shame if the ice maker in your fridge stopped working?
I've already been through that, man. What kind of hell do you want to put me through?
I'm just not saying anything. Just wouldn't it be a shame?
Wouldn't it be a shame? Yeah.
It would.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Flipping back over. I still
have our content. Our content. Our content is written. I'm trying to feed you lines, Brian.
I already said that line, though.
No, you didn't.
What did I say? I said our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer.
Oh, that's right. You didn't get to the part where it's...
Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly.
Right. And who's the base by?
Boom. Just for us.
That's right.
And that's all for this week.
And stay subscribed. I'm so proud of you. You still have one more line.
Yay! We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
You did so good. When we do it the third time for reals, it'll be great.